the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Great Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We are stacked. Seth Greenberg here momentarily, ESPN College Basketball Insider, on the University of Arizona making a controversial hire. In some fans' opinions, fans wanted a Wildcat for their men's basketball coach. They didn't get it. We'll have Seth Greenberg here momentarily on what's happening in Tucson today. The press conference coming up on Tommy Lloyd being named the new basketball coach. That's at 1:30. Peter King will be with us. Peter on the Cardinals free agency. But also I want to get into Peter about Kyle Pitts being the wild card. And what do the top 8 to 10 picks in the NFL draft look like today? From one of the best in the business, Peter King with Football Morning in America. And then Vern Lundquist. Uncle Vern is going to be with us. You know, Vern has his book. We had Vern on a few years ago, and fans just loved hearing Vern Lundquist. And he was in 16 this past week at Masters. Of course, the voice of the SEC, leaving the SEC. Vern did in retirement. Now the SEC is leaving CBS. So I want to get into the conversation with 80-year-old Vern Lundquist, a Hall of Fame broadcaster. That comes up. So we have a great, great show. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Jordan Spurgeon joins us. Spurge, you have been working on the U of A beat on this coaching hire of Tommy Lloyd, 1:30 press conference. What are you seeing out there today? What are you hearing out there today?
Yeah, I think we're the biggest thing I've been seeing on Twitter is now the arguments of who's got the better combo football basketball between ASU, Arizona, and then other Pac-12 schools as well, because this is, wow, you know, a marquee name. You're coming from a big school like Gonzaga, and it's pretty big there. And Gonzaga, they've said nothing but good things to say about Tommy Lloyd. I know, you know, Mark Few, the coach of Gonzaga there, had a statement today. Just talking, you know, in the 20 years they've worked together, Tommy has proven he's one of the game's elite coaches and highest character people. This is an incredible opportunity for him to lead an incredibly storied program and was a decision I know he carefully considered after receiving head coaching interest from many other schools over the years. And they wish him nothing but success at Arizona. So high praise from a great coach at a great program. And he was kind of next in line there. So it seems like a pretty good get for Arizona.
Have you ever heard anything negative about Gonzaga? The answer is no.
No.
No. Other than they play in a conference that is not strong top to bottom. And some of these people that get all caught up, and I've dealt with this with ASU fans. Oh, we got to get a Sun Devil in there. Really? If they can win, it doesn't matter. And so, but, you know, to your end, that's a really interesting point about who has the better football, basketball coaching combo. Because the hiring initially on the football side for U of A was not met with open arms. You know, the Herm hire with ASU initially was not met with open arms. I was one of those that said, this is a great move by ASU, and I got crushed. Today, Bobby Hurley has what? One player left, Jalen Graham? Colin Woods is leaving now. So, like, there's nobody left, Spurge. Nobody left at ASU. And here comes a guy that was Mark Few's lead guy. And he's coming down. He is saying that, you know what? We might get hit by the NCAA with a level one violation. But I don't care. I'm coming down here because I've been the guy next to Mark Few for 20 years. And I think I can win in Tucson. And it's a better job. People say, you're crazy. It's a better conference. If U of A can win and go to a Final Four, it's a bigger deal than the people on the outside saying, well, they beat USF, they beat Loyola Marymount, they beat Pepperdine, they beat USD, right? Am I right on this, or am I missing something?
No, you're right, and I told this to somebody yesterday. ASU had their basketball window to be the top dog over U of A just while this sort of transition was happening, and obviously you can't judge the hire too early, but at this point, I mean, that window is pretty much shut. Arizona is probably going to be in a better position next year and moving forward than ASU has been the last two or three years.
Yeah, the only question is, will the NCAA bring down the hammer? That's on the level one violations. And but man, there's a lot of upset U of A fans on this hire. It's just, it's not Damon Stoudemire. It's not, well, he's never been a head coach. Damon Stoudemire has been a head coach at a low level program, and he may be terrific. Miles Simon has not been a head coach, been in the NBA. So he has the University of Arizona next to him. So what? Drives me crazy.
You win, Spurgeon. You win.
I got to get Seth Greenberg. All right, good job there. We'll take a break. On the other side, Seth Greenberg, then Peter King and Vern Lundquist. Jam-packed show on a Thursday. Stay with us. Okay, as promised, later today, 1:30, the U of A will have the press conference to formally introduce Tommy Lloyd as the replacement for Sean Miller. A lot of outcry from U of A fans saying they wanted somebody in-house. I wanted to get a national perspective on this move by the U of A today. We found Seth Greenberg. Always good to catch up with Seth, one of the leading analysts out there, and of course, former coach with ESPN. He joins us for a few minutes. On the surface, when you heard Tommy Lloyd, the guy at U of A, Seth, what was your reaction?
It's a home run. I mean, look, Tommy Lloyd is sat next to one of the most successful coaches in recent history in Mark Few, and he's helped him build Gonzaga into one of the elite model programs in all of college basketball. Now, I can understand, obviously, when you see what happened in Indiana, when you see what happened at North Carolina, and quite honestly, when you see what happened at Arizona for the last few years, obviously under that microscope, that I can understand why the Arizona faithful, the former players, would say, why isn't one of our own good enough? And look, whether it's Damon Stoudemire or Miles Simon, who was an assistant coach to Lute Olson, you could say, yeah, they would have done a great job, and they might have done a great job. But it's not like Tommy Lloyd's not capable of doing a great job or won't do a great job. He's probably much more experienced. He understands the landscape of college basketball. He's had tremendous success recruiting, not only internationally, but nationally. I've watched him do walkthroughs and for practice. I've watched him in practice. I mean, he's a terrific coach who's worked for and with maybe the most successful coach in the country over the last 5 years. So I understand the disappointment, but I would say people need to take a step back and allow them, give themselves the opportunity to get to know Tommy Lloyd, get to understand the type of program and the respect he's going to have for the former players and the tradition of Arizona basketball.
Seth, on the surface, doesn't it feel like he must look at this situation and say, okay, the NCAA is looking at this closely and it's a level one violation. This program could be thrown in jail, but I'm after 20 years saying I believe that maybe this isn't going to be as severe as what some are portraying it to be, and I'm going to leave Mark Few, which, and I'm the coach in waiting. Like, there's that side of it that on the surface, everyone's expecting the U of A to get hammered. They may still get hit hard, but for him to take this, does that surprise you at all, or maybe he knows something behind the scenes?
Arizona's too good a job not to take.
Okay. Even with the SEC,
yeah, the NCAA. I mean, look, I think they understand that there's going to be some roadblocks and detours, and the road to success is always under construction, and you're going to have that. I mean, he understands that, but University of Arizona is just too good a job. If you have an opportunity to get that job with the tradition, with the facilities, with the commitment, with the opportunity to go into California and recruit the best players who, let's face it, they've had so many successful players from California mm-hmm. that have went there and had great success with the tradition of former NBA players, who, national championships, Final Fours, things of that nature. It's one of the premier jobs on the West Coast. And I don't know who would want to follow Mark Few, number one. Number two is Mark Few's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
He's a young guy. I mean, he's going to continue to recruit good players. They're going to continue to be one of the best programs in the country, not just the West Coast, but in the country. But why not go to a place where you can do your own thing? Now, I mean, it'll be different. There's no doubt about it. You don't, the uncertainty of the NCAA could impact recruiting. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, the one thing about the international players, they don't worry about that stuff. So I think he'll be up to do some work overseas. I think that the relationships that he built, that he'll put together a really good staff. If you look at Mark's staff, they're always good basketball people, but also great work ethics and high character. And he understands. I mean, I got to imagine he understands, you know, the potential issues. I always hate to see players get pay the price for other people's discretions. I would love to see the NCAA say, you know what, you made a decision, it took you two or three years or whatever it has been, it's been longer than that, but you've moved forward. We're going to hit you with a large, 7 $5 million, $7 million, $10 million, a large fine. And then it's time to move on. I would much rather see that happen, hurt someone in a pocketbook, than hurt the young people that are coming into school. It just doesn't make any sense long term, especially since those people had nothing to do with what went on prior to them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Before I get you out of here, Seth, I appreciate the short time to jump on board with us. That is, can he coach as a head coach? People are bringing that up, saying, okay, he's been with Mark Few, he's watched, but that doesn't necessarily mean it translates from being an assistant to a head coach. My response is, we simply don't know, but you've been in that space. You've heard those questions through the years. What do you say to those who wonder about his lack of head coaching experience?
Well, work for Roy Williams. You know, it's going to work for Hubert Davis. I think it worked for me pretty good. You know, eventually you got to get a head coaching job. And I would stay in Arizona. I mean, and I think Miles would have been a great choice, but Miles has never been a head coach. And Damon Stoudemire has been who I'm a big fan of, but he's been a head coach. It's not like, you know, they'd beaten anyone that, you know, you're trying to beat. And I think those two guys would have been great choices. I mean, they love the university, their connection to Coach Olson. They have great reputations, high, you know, character and work ethics and connect with people. But in the end, the administration made a decision. So if you really do love Arizona, if you're an Arizona fan and really do love Arizona, if you're a former Arizona player and really do love Arizona, then you know what you do. You get behind the coach who's the coach at Arizona and you give him a chance. I hate when these people, that's a good hire. That's a bad hire. What are they thinking? That guy's, why don't you just give people a chance to do their jobs? And then, you know, if they don't do a good job, you have a right to say, you know what? They made a mistake. But until that happens, it just, it frustrates me. And no one knows, like, no one knows what a good hire is, a bad hire until someone sits in that seat.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tom Love might be the best coach in the history of Arizona eventually before long. He's young enough where he could be there a really long time. You've never heard anything said about the Gonzaga program in the least bit in terms of lack of credibility or lack of integrity or, you know, doing things the right way. And I think that, you know, I think that was part of it. I mean, you know, they've got an image that is, you know, I'd say Villanova and Gonzaga probably the two best images in college basketball. So before people condemn the hire, I'd say give him a chance. Meet him. Get to know him. You're condemning someone you don't even know. You know, hear his vision for the program. Here is a commitment to the past and how he's going to honor the past and obviously include them in the program moving forward. He's surely a pretty bright guy. And if you speak to the former players at Gonzaga, you know, they all say incredible things about him in terms of a communicator and a connector and disappointment is part of it. I mean, but athletic directors are hired to make decisions. Presidents are hired to make decisions and give the people a chance to make a decision, support the person. If it doesn't work, you know, then you can turn and say, you know what, why didn't we do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
But surely starting, you know, and condemning something that never has not even been established yet doesn't make any sense to me.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time on short notice, Seth. Thanks for the reactions here on the hire.
Thank you.
Good seeing you. There's Seth Greenberg with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. Time now to visit with Peter King. Football morning in America. I wanted to go through the draft with it right around the corner, and also the Cardinals, the 30,000-foot view from the sky. Now they've added James Conner. Free agency is basically over. Fitz is still out there. What is the national view? What is Peter's view of what's going on here with the Cardinals?
They've signed a lot of famous people, you know. I don't know. You know, free agency with veteran players who have had significant injury issues is usually not a formula for success. I happen to think J.J. Watt could have a couple of good years left. But that's a could. Nobody knows. But he's not going to have the dominant years like he had 6 years ago. Very dubious about A.J. Green. I wrote something about this when he signed. You know, he's appeared to me to be disinterested the last few years, you know, and so if he still has a love of football, it's time for him to show it. We didn't see very much of that the last few years in Cincinnati, in part because of injury. And James Conner has never been able to stay healthy for a full year. And so, or consistently, I should say, he's obviously had healthy stretches.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you know, the training staff could be the MVP this year for the Cardinals. So I, you know, I'm a little dubious, but we'll see. I mean, they obviously have done a lot of homework on these guys. And so we'll see if it pans out.
I think Rodney Hudson's the one signee that I'm excited.
Rodney Hudson's fantastic. Yeah, I didn't mean to be altogether meh about it, but Rodney Hudson, that's an excellent deal for them. And there's a couple of additions this off season that are not going to get much attention, but Rodney Hudson and Corey Linsley, I mean, coincidentally, they're both centers with the Chargers. You know, they're both still at the point in their careers where it looks like they've got at least three or four good years left. And it's become such an increasingly important position, the center position. And so I think those are both, I think Rodney Hudson was an excellent pickup for them.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but do you have a line or two on Colt McCoy? Because there's fans saying, well, what happened with Brett Hundley? But when they play their final game of the season and Kyler goes down, I mean, they just did not show any sign of life. Colt McCoy, Peter, you got anything on him?
I love Colt McCoy. I think he's an above-average NFL backup. He's a very, very competitive person. And I am bullish on him being a backup. I thought that, you know, like if I were the Giants, I definitely would have wanted to keep him. I don't know what happened there. I've done zero reporting on Colt McCoy, but I think that's a very, very good backup. And the other thing about him, I think as a backup for Kyler Murray, he's going to be incredibly supportive. I mean, Brett Hundley was too, but he's going to be incredibly supportive of Kyler Murray.
Peter King, Football Morning in America with us. With the draft right around the corner, if you were to project the top five today as we're sitting here, how would it look from what you're hearing and what you're reporting?
You know, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, 1-2. My guess is Mac Jones, 3 to San Francisco. I think one of the great mysteries right now, and as we record this, we're exactly 2 weeks out from it. I'm glad there's some mystery. I have no idea what Atlanta's going to do. Mm-hmm. I wrote my column the other day that I think the majority of people who are in this business, you know, and decision makers, think they're going to sit right there and take Kyle Pitts. You know, Matt Ryan is going to be 36 years old this year. He wants to play like Brady into his 40s. And as I wrote, the Atlanta Falcons have to decide whether they believe that Matt Ryan can take them either deep into the playoffs or to the Super Bowl. If they believe they can, and there are many people who believe that Arthur Smith, the new coach there, is a perfect match with Kyle Shanahan. So if you ask me my gut feeling is they sit right there and take Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. And then number five, I think the Bengals are taking Ja'Marr Chase, the wide receiver from LSU. Now, I talked to somebody yesterday when we were exchanging information, and he said, oh, there's no way they won't take a tackle. And you know, they absolutely, totally could. But I think that even though Riley Reiff is no great tackle, I think they are going to be more content with getting a great wide receiver potentially right there and then capitalizing on a deep tackle market in the second round.
I've been pushing the Kyle Pitts narrative out here, and I know at 16 there's very little chance, but I do know this, Peter, that Steve Keim is not afraid. And he is a riverboat gambler, and you put Kyle Pitts out there on the field with Kyler Murray in a time where in free agency, okay, they went and got a running back. That's not going to happen in the first round, whether I like James Conner or don't. Their offensive line, they've shored that up. Patrick Peterson's left, so look, the secondary makes a lot of sense with a corner. But you put a player like that on the field in Kyle Pitts in a year where I think Cliff and Kyler are both going to be like, okay, is this going to work out or not? It's a once-in-a-generation player, Peter.
Look, I get your point, but I'm going to just tell you right now that the San Francisco trade from 12 to 3 has really had an impact on this draft because – I can tell you that Terry Fontenot, the new GM of the Falcons, I think he would be to go down to 16. It might take Steve Keim his next 2 months.
Yeah,
you know, in 22 and 23, and look, because I can also tell you this. There's a few things that I feel confident about. I do not think Kyle Pitts gets past Miami at 6, and let's just say that Justin Fields and or Trey Lance is sitting there around 6 and 7. Like, I think 7, Detroit is probably going to be a wide receiver. So we can sort of see right now.
Yeah.
5, 6, and 7 are not going to be quarterbacks. I don't believe the Bengals are going to trade down. I'm fairly sure Miami's not going to trade down. And I think Detroit might trade down. But then you get into the part of this draft that you have Carolina at 8 and Denver at 9. And I believe Carolina at 8 and Denver at 9 are the sweet spot for New England at 15, Washington at 19, Chicago at 20, to jump up and to try to get either Justin Fields or Trey Lance if one or both is still there. I happen to think there's going to be some significant action, early in the first round of this draft. So if I were Steve Keim and I wanted Kyle Pitts, I'm probably going to have to trade to 4, and I'm probably going to have to give up my next 2 ones to do that. And I don't even know that Atlanta would take it if you offered the next 2 ones. Kyle Pitts is a guy. I mean, Mel Kiper's been doing this 43 years, said he's the best tight end I've ever seen, best tight end he's ever graded. So I look at it and I say, if you can imagine that a tight end would be the first non-quarterback picked in a draft. That's never happened. And so it's a really intriguing, I'd say 4 through 10 this year.
Yeah. And Kyle Pitts is that one guy in this year's draft that could turn everything upside down for those teams that don't need a quarterback. It's pretty apparent. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight as always, Peter. Stay safe. Thanks.
Okay, Brad, all the best to you. Thank you.
As promised, and I made mention of it on Monday, the number of notes of people saying, boy, the Masters was great, but it was even better to hear Vern Lundquist at 16. I'll just tell you that when we had Vern on about his book a few years back, you know, that people just said, you have to have Vern come back on. And I said, well, of course, as long as Mr. Lundquist would agree to come on board. And there he is. Here's Vern Lundquist. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Brad. I'm still recovering from what might best be described as a strenuous week in Augusta. It was, one never dismisses the great respectability you have just going to Augusta. Mm-hmm. And this is my 37th time. And so I finally know my way around almost, but we were in a brand new center now. The membership of Augusta National moved us across the road from Washington Road, the very familiar boulevard that goes in front of the Masters. And that's from which you, if you are a member or a golfer, you enter Magnolia Lane. Well, we are now on the other side of Washington Road, and it is a spectacular place. All of us who saw it for the first time last Monday, a week ago Monday, I was stunned at how beautiful it is. And it's built in the style of the Augusta National Clubhouse. It's us, ESPN, Tokyo Broadcasting, and any other Sky Sports. I think there is a building for each. So anyway, that welcome back to Augusta, it was just great. And because of I have the continuing back problems, I had two spinal surgeries, neither of which was enormously successful. The second one was 2 years ago, and that was to correct the issues that hadn't been solved in the first one. And now I've got two unsolved spinal surgeries. So they decided, they being CBS and Augusta National, to not have me climb the tower at 16.
Yeah.
That's straight up, about 15, 18 feet. And Jim Nance and I were comparing the climb at 18 and the climb at 15. He says, mine's worse. I said, no, because you're not my age yet. So,
and your back is better than mine, Jim. Let's be straight
up. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but you frisky colt. they've just got, our technicians are superb. And you'd never know that I'm not in a tower like everybody else is, or Dottie Pepper is on the ground. They equalize the sound. And the last time I was in a tower was 2018, I'd say. No, 2019, because I tried it after the surgery. Didn't work. So anyway, other than my own personal problems, and they're workable and livable, just to be back there as long as I have been back there. My first one was 83, and I had a two-year hiatus when I went to Turner Sports and then came back. So I'm still one in front of Nance.
There you go. There you go. How different was it from the November Masters?
Well, I think considerably. We had more patrons. There were, I think the estimate was 5,000. Augusta National never revealed how many they were allowing in. But it was nice to have patrons back. After November, there was no reaction from the audience.
Right.
This time, you know, when I missed it most, watching as one of the great walks, there are three great walks in the inward nine, the second nine, in my view. One is from the 11th green to the 12th tee, and you make a stroll, and there are banks of people behind you because it's a great vantage point. The other is after you hit your tee shot at 16 and you walk down by the pond. And then obviously the walk up 18. Interesting, last night here in Austin, where we are spending what is called the mud season in Colorado. The resorts are closed. The snow is melting. It gets muddy.
Muddy.
Yeah, so we're here in Austin, and we'll stay here till June 1st. But I had dinner last night with Scott Sayers, who has been Ben Crenshaw's agent since they graduated from high school.
Wow.
In 1970.
Wow.
And they're inseparable. But we were talking about Masters over the years, and Ben qualified, I think his first was 71. Not sure. I should know better than to bring it up and not have the answer. But he's been, and I think we all remember the emotion of his second win in 95. And he's become a dear friend over the years. I went to sister with Ben's older. I went to high school with Ben's older sister, Bonnie. So we act as if we both remember. But I do have very significant recollections of interviewing Ben Crenshaw when he was a sophomore at Austin High School.
Here. That's great.
Yeah,
that's great. That's fun. That's fun. What did you make out of Matsuyama? You know, Vern, we went to Matsuyama out here, and Phoenix Open is not the Masters. It never will be. It won't even be close, obviously. But we've seen Matsuyama out here, and
you do have a different 16th hole there than
yes,
we do.
We do. Yes, we do. There's no question about that.
No, not at all. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It's fine. It's fine. We're just conversing. I think Matsuyama, what did you make out of his performance?
We were blessed in this. We were very fortunate to have these three men on our telecast. Nick Faldo played the Japanese tour as a young man. Ian Baker Finch played the Japanese tour for a couple of years, being an Australian. Frank Nobilo, being a New Zealander, played the Japanese tour. So they were able, I thought, with great credibility, to give us a sense of what it was like for Matsuyama representing not only himself, but the entire nation. Mm-hmm. And I've been there a few times, and I do know, I've never played golf there, but I do know how they honor and respect the game, the sport of golf. The best moment when he did win it, bogeyed, you know, very much like Tiger in November. No, as Derek. And see, the memory starts to fall. Tiger in 2019.
2019, yeah.
Yeah, and he knew he had a cushion. So when Matsuyama won, there was not a real sense of elation present on the course, I don't think. But I know that in Japanese people hadn't slept all night. Mm-hmm. And it means that much to them. And the really tender spot in the aftermath of his win was when his young caddy, Shoko, turned and bowed in the appropriate Japanese manner and honored the course. And it was very emotional to see that. And you got a sense of what it meant to those two men, but more than that, 9 million people who play golf in Japan, whatever the number is.
Yeah, and that's one of those moments that will be shown in highlights for years and years years. You're going to have the fist pumps and the elation, but it's a caddy simply bowing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Brad. Yeah. And Nick even suggested on the air, he said, and this was on Saturday, I believe, Nick said, if he wins this, if he can accomplish this, I'll bet he's chosen to light the Olympic flame. And here again, it's Nick's awareness of what this sport means to the Japanese. I was there in 98 for the Nagano Olympic Games, Winter Olympics. And the games meant a lot to the Japanese, but not like this. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, if good fortune holds and we hope that the Japanese at Tokyo can host the Summer Olympics a year later. It's still problematic, I think.
And those that are watching, if you don't have Vern's book, look, and Vern didn't say, please show my book. This is just me saying, you got to read this. Okay. So
no, Vern Lundquist.
No, Vern Lundquist with us, of course, for a few minutes. What's it like, if you can sum it up in a few minutes, of the post round when all of you at CBS get together and it's the faces and voices that nobody knows behind sitting at home watching? They hear you and they hear Nick and they hear Jim. But when you're with the audio technician or the cameraman, is there fist bumps, high fives, hugs? Do you break down? Give the fans kind of a pull the curtain back of the whole crew.
Sure. It is. Now, I used to do all the golf full time. Mm-hmm. And that meant, you know, like our guys are now 1 week. Well, they've got 10 in a row. So they will see each other quite often. I used to be a part of that pack. Mm-hmm. And I'll share something that still is a treasured memory to me. In 86, when Jack made the putt on 17 to win, to take the lead, he didn't win it with that. I made the call that, you know, I think we've all seen hundreds of times of yes, sir, with slightly more emphasis than that. And it resonated with people. And it gets replayed in the opening tees. And I'm honored by that.
Yes.
But when I got off the tower and drove back to what was then our compound, and it was about a quarter of a mile away, well, longer than that from 17, you wind around. And I got there, and our executive producer then was Frank Cherkinian, who produced the first telecast for CBS of the Masters in 1956. And we called him the Ayatollah. Wow. Partly out of respect, mostly out of fear.
Yeah.
He could scorch you. And I had to call with Jack, and Jack hung on to win. Both Tom Kite and Greg Norman had a chance to equal him on 18. And I got back to the compound, stepped out of the cart, and the Ayatollah came out and didn't say a word to me, but gave me an embrace for the ages. Mm. And it's one of my favorite memories of all the years I've been there. But yes, in a wider answer, more appropriate to your question, we're all close. Now, obviously, in human beings, some are closer to others than they are to others.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I've roomed, Brad, for 11 years with David Faraday and Peter Costas. That was Animal House. And David, I've known David. He's a dear, dear friend. When they were here in Austin for the Dell Match Play Technologies about 3 weeks ago, or how many ever, Nancy and I, my wife and I, had dinner with David, and just to reunite. But living with David and Peter,
yeah,
and I've grown really close to Ian Baker Finch. Frank Novello is, in an understated way, one of the warmest, funniest guys I've ever met. And Dottie Pepper might be the best on-course reporter who's ever done this. Mm. You listen to her carefully, and she is spot on. And it's a reactive relationship that she has with all the guys in the towers. And she's quick as a whip, and she's become a close friend. So there, on a successful broadcast, yeah, there are a lot of hugs and expression of human emotions, because these were colleagues, but more significantly, we're friends. You've got to be. You can't have antagonistic feelings towards someone with whom you're going to work on the air for all the hours, especially at the Masters.
Well, and it's live too. You're going to have moments that aren't the best. You don't want those moments, but there may be something that happens in any sport.
Oh, you've heard my work.
You know, it's just when you're ad-libbing for 4 hours and you guys are playing through a rain delay or weather and you've got to figure out what to do, or somebody is taking their time and really taking their time. I mean, it's no matter what sport. Before I get you out of here, the SEC. So they're leaving CBS for ABC in 2024. It's part of business, I guess I look at it. How do you look at that page being turned as voice of SEC for so many years?
Well, I'm very sad about it. Very. Because it's part of my history. It's a part of my life with CBS that I absolutely treasure. I got to do that for 17 years. And during the last 7 or 8, we lived full-time, as you know, Brad, in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Right.
Well, the commute from Steamboat is not necessarily swift. There are no nonstops from Steamboat Springs to Gainesville, Florida. I wish there were, but I used to have to take Steamboat Denver, Denver, Atlanta, wherever the game was. So it took on average 9.5 hours to get there. And then I did the same thing coming back. And Sean McManus, my boss, about 9 years into that relationship with the SEC, pulled me aside. And he said, would your life be made any easier if you had a condo in Atlanta? And I said, it would especially be easier if you paid for it. and they did. And we were in the same complex for 7, 8, 9 years, how many ever. Excuse me, that's chronic bronchitis that creeps up every once in a while. And we grew to love the Atlanta area. And Nance and I made a rule, anything under 4 hours, we would drive and enjoy the countryside.
Sure.
And I mean, we would love going to Knoxville, and then we'd segue on our way home on Sunday and go to Asheville, North Carolina, and see different parts of the country. And then the flights were 1 hour and max. So we really, really had a pleasurable time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we decided in 2016, and it was collaborative. Sean and I talked and said, you know, at that time, you're 76 years old. What do you think? And I thought, you know, it might be time. Hmm. And so I stepped away from it. I still miss it. A quick aside, Gary Danielson and I were polar opposites in personality. I mean, we could not be. It's like he's from Antarctica and I'm from the Arctic. But we love each other and we got along great. And he is a brilliant analyst. If you listen to him carefully, he can break. Anyway, about 2 years after Brad took over for me, Gary called me one day. And he said, how do you spend your Saturday afternoons? I said, I'm a college junkie. I wake up to game day in the morning with, then it was Chris Fowler, now Reese Davis on ESPN. I watch the early game. And then at 2:30 in the mountains or 1:30 in the mountains, I settle back, put a Diet Coke in the coffee table, put my feet up, click you guys on and listen to the theme song and watch you on camera. And then 5 minutes into your telecast, I start screaming at you. That's like millions of Americans. Why are you saying something like that? Makes sense. Come on. Don't pull for Auburn. Quit pulling for Alabama. And, boy, there's a passion down there that is a treasure to behold in the SEC. They do take it seriously.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it meaningful to all of us who are lucky enough to do it. So I miss it. And then a year later, I thought, well, if I'm not doing football, why keep up the grind with basketball? I was 1A behind Jim and Billy with Bill Raftery. He's one of my dearest friends for 15 years. And if you're second in line, you get a lot of good assignments. Mm-hmm. But there's, Brad, there's nothing tougher than that first full day, Thursday or Friday of the first week, when you do four games in succession. Yeah. And you are just fried when the last game tips off at 9:30. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let's go 0 for 2. And Sean called me and he said, I appreciate your decision. I do have a request of you, though. We would like for you to continue working the PGA Championship and, most importantly, the Masters. And so now it's, you know, I'm at an age where it's a little more stressful than it used to be, just memory and expression. I'm 80 years old. And sometimes it shows more than it should. Like, what was your name, Jim?
Yeah, right, right. But it, and I will just tell you that Sunday, actually my email and my social started getting notes about, it's so great to hear Uncle Vern, as people say. And then by Monday it was, what a great tournament. Boy, the broadcast was terrific. And I really appreciate you giving us so much time to talk about it. And will you be back next year? I would say, hearing you today, let's see. Or do you know if you'll be back next year at Masters?
I don't know. Yeah. Understandably, I'm on a one-year contract, and that is age-specific. So I'm committed to the PGA. And I would, I don't want to put my foot out there, or my leg or my ankle, but I would guess, based on what we all did at Augusta this year, that knock on wood, because I want to go back. But the negotiations are in November. And so I wait. I really, it's like somebody, I serve at the pleasure of the president. And in a very real sense, that's true. But the reaction that I'm not a social media guy. I've made it this far without Twitter. I'm not going to take it up right now. But my brother, Dan, who lives here, is constantly making me aware. He always filters out the bad stuff, because there always is.
Yeah.
And he only passes on the good stuff. So I just puff up and say, well, I'm like Sally Fields. They like me. They really like me.
So I'm going to let you go off that. The book, make sure, if you don't have the book, how many different ways can I frame it for Vern? But the book is terrific. And Vern, I really appreciate the time. And it was great to catch up with you again. Thank you so much.
Brad, thank you very much. And hello to everybody in Phoenix, including Gary McCord and Peter Costas.
There you go. Good guys. Yeah. Good guys.
Yes, they are.
As you said earlier, Animal House. I like that line. I think those two guys are in that group too. See you, Vern. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.